Welcome to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons, helping you boost your health, energy, and productivity.
Hi there, and welcome to another episode of the Thrive TV Show. I'm Lauren Parsons, your host, and today I'm joined by Lotta Dan, all the way from down in Wellington. So welcome, Lotta.
Hi, Lauren. Great to be here.
So nice to connect with you and to share your story. Today we're talking about life in recovery. And so Lotta's going to share about how she learned to face up to her emotions, why self-care is subtle and powerful, and why we shouldn't believe all of the hype that is out there about alcohol. So looking forward to sharing your story, Lotta. But before we do that, can I just ask you my this and that questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, so tell me, beachfront or lakefront?
Beachfront.
Beach, nice. Skirts or pants?
Skirts.
Cool. Travel alone or travel with friends?
Friends.
Okay, nice. Do you rather be able to fly or turn invisible?
Fly.
Yeah, me too. Turkey or Greece?
Turkey. I've been there before. It was amazing.
Ah, very cool. Hip-hop or rock?
My husband would shoot me if I didn't say rock, so rock.
Okay, nice. Would you rather be able to play 10 musical instruments beautifully or speak 10 languages fluently?
Languages, definitely.
Okay, nice. Pet pig or pet goat?
Pig, I think. Supposed to be good pets, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. We don't have one of those. And last question is, what's your favourite non-alcoholic drink?
Fizzy water.
Fizzy water. Okay, nice. Fantastic.
With a splash of lime.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that sounds great. Nice. So Lotta Dan drank alcohol steadily and heavily from age 15 to age 39. She got sober in 2011 with the help of an anonymous blog called Mrs. D is Going Without, and her memoir of the same name was published 3 years later. So in her second memoir, Mrs. D is Going Within, that came next, and she's also now released her third book, The Wine Clock Myth, The Truth You Need to Know About Women and Alcohol. She writes about alcohol, addiction and recovery from her home in Wellington, New Zealand. And she also manages the community website, Living Sober. So thank you so much for spending some time with us today, Lotta. And yeah, do you want to just share a bit about your story and how it changed your life?
Absolutely. Sometimes I can't believe how my life has changed. And it's just so true that from the darkest times, the most beautiful things can grow. I mean, it was 9.5 years ago when I found myself sitting on the loo at 3 a.m. in floods of tears at my absolute lowest point, heavily addicted to alcohol. I'd started being deceitful and hiding empty bottles from my husband. And I was so stuck and so miserable and so confused because there was no one to blame but myself. That's the terrible thing about addiction. I didn't want to drink, but I wanted to drink. And I'd had back and forth for 3 or 4 years really actively in my brain knowing there was a problem. And I was reduced to this point where that last morning, I just sat on the loo in floods of tears and made a big decision to quit, which is utterly terrifying because we live in a world that champions alcohol. And I was firmly, you know, in the belief that it was needed for a fun life. And I thought if I stopped drinking, my life was going to end and I'd be boring and sober forevermore. And here I am 9.5 years later and I am not boring and I am sober.
Well done. Yeah. So tell me about that mindset flip. How can you have fun or not be boring and be sober? How do you make that work?
Well, you're just not. I mean, this is the thing. We're so conditioned. And actually, drunk people are boring, right? Sober people aren't boring. We're just people that don't drink alcohol. It does take an adjustment, though. You start off and you go to social events, you go to parties, and you do feel really, I did. I mean, I can't talk, I felt very uncomfortable. I felt very, like everyone was staring at me and thinking I was boring and dumb. And I had to just practice and learn and keep going to things to realize actually the liquid in my glass doesn't have the power to make any social event fun, right? It's all of these other factors. What kind of mood am I in? Am I happy in my dress? Are these my people? Is it my kind of group? Is the music good? Am I in a good mood? How am I in my life? All that stuff is what makes a party or an event, you know, fun or not. It's not the liquid in my glass. And for 20 years, I gave all the power to alcohol and it just doesn't hold it. So the answer is it takes trial and error and it takes time. But once you start really realizing that we're just living in this fallacy that alcohol is the ticket to fun, it's complete freedom, I tell you.
Yeah. And I love that what you talk about, you know, that the liquid that's in your glass doesn't define you. It reminds me of a few years ago, I got to celebrate a friend's 50th birthday and she organized this amazing night out. And to kick it all off, we all went down to this hotel reception and in our sort of ball gowns, because we're going to this really amazing event. And we all had sparkling water actually in champagne flutes, because she was really into looking after your health and well-being for lots of different reasons in her life. And I just really admired her, because she could have easily, you know, gone into the pressure of the situation thinking, oh, we've got to have champagne. But it was one of the most uplifting, joyous, fun evenings that I've been out to ever. And that was how she started it off. And I thought that was so interesting. Right.
Yeah, good on her. I mean, I need to say, and I do want to say that I'm not anti-alcohol. I know I really do go on about how great I feel sober, and it's true, because I was in a dark, awful, addicted place. Not everyone is in that place. There are a lot of people who can moderate the drug of alcohol and use it casually and don't have a problem with it. So I'm not advocating we need to remove alcohol from everywhere. That's not what it's about. It's just about recognizing it's not simple for everyone. And for me, I really want to get the message out to people who are feeling like I was, the people who are stuck and miserable, so that they can realize you can live without it and be happy. So it's a really fine line of like not wanting to come across, you know, the whole wowza, you know, there's nothing worse than being seen as a wowza. So, you know, it is important that I sort of spell that out. It's not about let's have no alcohol in the world. It's about let's just be more open with each other about how we're feeling about our drinking. And if you're not happy, know that it's possible to get out, because I did it. And if I did it, anyone can.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think are the signs to look out for? If someone's listening in and they're feeling like, am I just a social drinker? Am I fine? Or is it getting too far? You know, so for people to recognize the signs for themselves or in others, what would you say?
I would say that they will know. You've got to trust your gut. There'll be a little voice in your head that's worried. You will be feeling guilty on occasion. You will be waking up in the wee small hours, beating yourself up because you had too much again. What did I say? Who did I message on Facebook last night? I can't remember. You know what I mean? Like the drinker knows the truth, and only the drinker knows the truth. You could see someone drunk at a party and think they've got a problem. That might be their one binge of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person in the corner that's looking fine who secretly knows that they've been hungover four times already this week. You know, it's trusting that little voice inside your head, and also just being honest, like, are the negatives outweighing the positives? Is it that I wake up every morning after a drinking night with the girls with really crippling anxiety? You know, is it that on a Wednesday afternoon my to-do list is crushing me and I feel like I'm drowning and the only thing that's going to give me relief is alcohol? Those are warning signs, because that's when it's not just a fun, light thing. It's actually something you're relying on, and there's other stuff maybe that you need to look at.
Mm. And you said that one of the keys for you was actually facing up to your emotions. So tell us about, how did you do that? How do you recommend others can do that?
Well, this is the most fascinating, to me, this is the most fascinating thing about the whole process for me, because I knew I had a problem with alcohol. I thought that I was an aging party girl whose habit had just got out of control. I had no idea, in actual fact, that I had been using alcohol to avoid my emotions my whole life. And I didn't realize until I took the alcohol away and got really emotional, like,
wow,
outrageously, you know, angry and sad. And it's calmed down now because I've got used to feeling these things. But my habit had been a daily habit for 20 years. And so every day I was dulling myself. And I now realize that I'm naturally a very watery person. And I'd spent most of my life trying to avoid feeling sad. I had a huge amount of sadness inside me from stuff in my childhood. And like I say, I'm naturally quite a watery. That's just who I am. And I'm okay with that now. But at first, it was really uncomfortable. And I only realized because I got so emotional and I had a literal aha moment when I was watching Oprah one day, to be honest.
Wow.
And I realized, you know, holy moly, this is what it's all about. I've been trying to avoid feeling things and I have to learn how to feel things. And that's been the journey. Sorry for using the cliched word. That's the journey I've been on. How do I deal with things without reaching for wine to help? And, you know, this is where the self-care and the other kind of healthy strategies and stuff comes into play because I had none of them.
Thank you so much for your vulnerability, because I think, you know, through your story, so many people will be able to relate and understand, you know, that. And it's really interesting that that's where it starts for you, looking at, rather than using alcohol to damp down our emotions, actually realizing that we can acknowledge them, which is something I'm really passionate about, understanding how we're feeling and how we want to feel and being able to articulate how we're feeling is, you know, that first step to being able to work through it. We know that once we articulate how we're feeling, let's say, oh, I'm feeling really disheartened today, or I'm feeling inferior because of this thing happened and I compared myself to someone else, actually being able to express it and sit with it rather than just push it down, because it keeps coming out, doesn't it?
Yeah, huge. That's something I do with my kids now as well. I always try and label how they're feeling. I say, I understand you're feeling frustrated. And I can see that they feel validated the minute it's reflected back to them. It's so cliched, isn't it? But it is true.
So true. So true.
We have to also acknowledge it's not fun a lot of the time. It's uncomfortable feeling frustrated, or, you know, angry or jealous or bored or whatever. I mean, it can be really, you know, especially if it's a good phase of it and you're just feeling uncomfortable all the time. So it's natural to want to push it away. But what I've learned now through 9.5 years of being sober is, and again, it's so cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway, if you allow yourself to sit with it and grit and grind your way through, when you come out and you look back, you have this kind of clarity of understanding and even just feeling a bit more at peace at it, simply because you let yourself feel it. You don't even have to do anything. You don't have to solve it, be clever about how you dealt with it. You just by letting yourself feel it, that alone is what it's all about. It's just about acknowledging and letting that be and then moving on. So, yeah, it's subtle but so powerful.
And how did you deal with, you know, the fear of judgment? For example, when you brought out your book, when you did your blog, when you went public with this, and obviously your husband being a well-known journalist, how was that for you? How was that for Corin?
Yeah, so we talked about it beforehand. And at the point where I came out publicly, I had been anonymously blogging for 4 years, and I had a lot of people reading, following, commenting. I had a sense of this community behind me, which really strengthened me. But yeah, coming out and saying, you know, I'm actually Lotta Dan and this is what I look like and I live in a suburb and I've got, you know, a busy life. It was a bit nerve-wracking, but I just always, and I still do to this day, I just always felt the strength of, I just want to help people that were like me. There are people who are waking up this morning feeling like I did that last morning where I decided to quit. Utterly miserable, stuck, confused, and really low about themselves. And I just, any vulnerability I have, I just try and push aside because I want to reach them and genuinely help them. And separate to that, you know, Corin and I, we lead a pretty small life. You know, we have a cozy house with our kids and our dog. We watch telly together. We make cups of tea, empty the dishwasher, which we have for dinner. We really need to sweep the path because the leaves are getting slippy. You know, that it's all very ordinary. So that keeps it grounded and lovely.
Fantastic. Well, I have to say, you know, I think I can just imagine from your point of view that it would have been a really scary process and quite emotional coming out. And I think often when we're picturing being vulnerable, I was just reflecting on vulnerability earlier, that often we feel that we'll be judged. But yet when I see what you've done, I have nothing but admiration. And I'm sure that, you know, that's the way that people respond, that when we actually do share our stories, it helps to reduce stigma, it helps to boost understanding and empathy, and just creates, yeah, this amazing space where people then feel they can step out as well. So yeah, thank you for the work you're doing.
Oh, that's right. And for some reason, I don't feel ashamed about being a recovering alcoholic.
Right.
And by the way, you have to choose. I'm okay using the word alcoholic on myself. That's my choice, but it's a word that you should be careful with labeling other people. Just put that in there, because it does come with such loaded meaning. But I just sort of feel like there's, why should I be ashamed of getting addicted to something that is addictive? Like alcohol is an addictive drug, okay? Getting addicted to it doesn't make you weak or a bad person. It just makes you someone who got addicted to something that is addictive. Mm-hmm. So the more of us that can speak out, and there are a lot more, especially in New Zealand now, but everywhere, who are speaking out openly about taking alcohol away because they can't manage it, the better, because then we'll really start to break down. There's no judgment, none at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. Tell me about the role that, you know, the media and the messages that we hear about alcohol has on society and on our lives.
No, it's huge. And this is why I wrote my latest book, because as much as I really want to connect with people on an individual level and help them get out, there's a great saying, which is something like, at some point you get sick of plucking people out the river, you got to go upstream and find out why they're falling in. And we live in a society that is saturated with alcohol. Visually, it's everywhere. It's in our supermarkets. There's like 9 outlets in my suburb alone. It's in the media, it's in social media. And always the images are of happy, healthy people drinking. Mm-hmm. You don't see the housewife on her knees vomiting into the toilet. That was me, you know, trying to be quiet so she didn't wake up her kids. You don't see those images unless it's a movie of the cliched, you know. Generally, we're just presented with alcohol as a positive thing, and it's a real problem because it's a lie, because a lot of people have issues with it. So yeah, I'm a huge advocate now of we need some legislative changes to shift the environment that we live in. And again, it's not about removing alcohol. Anyone can drink mm-hmm. it and buy it, you know, freedom of choice. It's just about putting some protections around it so that it's treated like the product that it is, which is inherently dangerous. So much like cigarettes, they shouldn't be able to advertise it freely. They shouldn't be able to just have it sitting all sweet and innocent next to the bread and milk in the supermarket. They shouldn't be able to see ads pop up in my social media or my teenage son's social media. You know, there should be those limits in place. My thing is change the marketing and leave price alone for now, because I don't want to make people who want to drink angry, you know, let keep it cheap for now. But if nothing else, put much more limits on sponsorship and advertising, because it's just crazy.
It is interesting. And I think we often don't even picture what the implications and flow on of that is. You know, you picture when you mentioned your teenage son, and that's the message that, yeah, so very early on in life, that's the message that we're seeing, that drinking is cool, yeah, that getting drunk is cool, all of those sort of things. And like you say, that internal message that you had absorbed, that if I don't drink, I'm boring.
Yeah, that's right. And even sports stars with the, you know, logo on their shirts, which still happens. I mean, we'd laugh now because cricket used to be sponsored by Benson and Hedges. And now we look at that and say, that's crazy, because everyone knows cigarettes cause cancer. Like, you know, it's not good for cricketers to smoke. But we're still in that mindset with the booze, where we haven't quite made the correlation, because it's been this way for so long. I think change is starting to happen, but we definitely need a groundswell of support from a lot of people to say, yeah, it's a good idea, we should put limits. The alcohol industry is big and powerful, and they employ really clever marketing people and lobbyists who put a lot of pressure to not have things change. But hopefully we'll have a brave enough government that will do something about it.
Mm. And what would you say to the individual who is perhaps thinking, I'd like to get back into moderation, or I'd like to stop? Either one, you know, as you said, there's no hard and fast rules around it. What are there some techniques or tips that you found really helpful at a practical level to be able to go to a party and enjoy it without drinking, or how to host others and still be a great host, all those sort of tricky situations.
Yeah. So with the socializing specifically, and I did this myself when I first got sober, make a mental list, write it down if you want, but make a mental list. What are all of the factors of this event that are good? Not the alcohol part. Why is it good? Is it celebrating a friend's promotion? Is it you've got new shoes? It's the end of the year and it's getting warmer? Like, make a list literally of all of the things about this event that are good and positive, and focus on them, because that is actually what this is all about. Socializing is about connecting with humans. It's not about what we're drinking. So think about all those things. If there's nothing, it's not your event. And no amount of alcohol is going to make it your event, right?
I'm thinking that as well, that if you make that list and that list is hard to come up with, then maybe it's actually just a case of saying no to going to the event.
Exactly. Saying no, or if you can't, if you need to be a plus one for your partner and it's a duty thing, then at least cut yourself some slack and understand you're probably not going to feel great and you're probably going to go home and think, well, that wasn't that much fun. So before you go, you know, set up your jammies on your pillow, put your electric blanket on, make a little something so you know I'm going to do this thing I have to do. I don't really want to. And when I get back, I'm going to be looking after myself, because at the end of the day, this bit is the most important, and that's what it's all about. So yeah, that's the main thing for socializing, is just be really clear on all of that other stuff, and don't think that alcohol has all the power, because it doesn't.
And I know that you're coming on touching on that self-care side of it. I know that you say self-care is subtle and powerful. What do you mean by that?
I think sometimes self-care gets a bad rap and people are like, self-care, boring. Bubble baths and scented candles, whatever. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love both those things a lot. But I think self-care more than anything is an attitude. It's about, and again, this is what getting sober is all about, you have to connect in with yourself kindly. And so self-care is about having an attitude of, I'm looking after me. I'm looking after me. As you would a good friend who's going through something, or a loved one, a family member. And so it's subtle. It could be as simple as, like I said before, putting your jammies just nicely ready for when you're going to climb into bed at the end of a hard night and you're sober. Or getting yourself that magazine or that special newspaper that costs a lot of money, you know, talking because my husband wanted me to get him the Guardian Weekly, it's $15 yesterday. And I was like, yes, you deserve it. But, you know, it's just having that attitude of, it's little subtle actions that you make throughout the day with the, it's not just what you're doing, it's the mindset of, I'm doing this for me. This is for me. This is because I'm worth, you know what I mean? It's subtle.
Absolutely.
It's not the actual act. It's not what you're buying. It's that subtle little thinking in your head that I'm doing this for me because I'm worth it. And that's why I say it's subtle, but it's so powerful. I mean, this is the crux of it, really.
It is, yeah. There's one thing that comes to mind to share, and that is that often when I ask people how they feel if they were to do something just for them, generally 90% of a room might tell me that they feel selfish and or guilty. And those two things tend to go together, that if I take time out just for me, oh, that's so selfish. I'd love to do that, but that's selfish, and I'll feel guilty if I do that, because I could be folding the washing, sorting the kids, doing this, you know, for my parents, my friends. So we end up at the bottom of the list. But what I say to people as a mindset flip is that if you don't take time to do the things that fill you up, that restore your soul, that give you joy, then you don't take time to fill your cup up, then you can't overflow that love and energy and passion out to others.
Yeah.
And so if you end up being that grumpy, impatient, tired version of yourself, then actually that is selfish. And so that can sound, you know, quite harsh, really. It's a bit of tough love. But
I like that.
Yeah, for anyone listening in, you know, that's what I would say. Just if you want to flip your mindset around this, maybe that's a little helpful tool to just remind yourself from time to time, oh, yeah, if I don't take that time out to get out of nature, to garden, to do whatever's the creative thing I love, to just sit and have a hot cup of tea or to have a bath and listen to the music I love or light a candle. But I don't take time to do that, and I end up being my grumpy, impatient, less than my best version of myself, then that is actually selfish. Yeah, and if you can have that, like, re-record over that old tape in your mind, it will be the key to freeing you to actually go, yeah, I'm going to do a little something just for me, and that's okay.
And zero guilt. I totally agree with you. You can't feel guilty about that. My big self-care thing, if I'm really honest, is lying on the sofa or the bed and watching really bad reality TV. I love it. I absolutely love it. I really do. I love The Real Housewives. I love Big Brother Australia. I love that terrible TV. It's mine. It gives me great joy watching humans unfold, analyzing them. I just love it. And I lie on the sofa and I watch it and I have no guilt and I refuse to. And it is for me and I'm worth it.
Yeah. And I think it's great to have those go-to things, you know, have a daily non-negotiable that you just know you put in place, that it's like your little safety belt to keep you on track, isn't it? Yeah. I love that. And I think that self-care, yeah, is a label. It sort of seems unpopular in some ways or a bit soft, but actually it builds such great inner strength when we do take time, we realise that we're worth it. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Sometimes self-care can just mean saying no. No is a sentence. You know, it's a powerful sentence, and that's self-care. Boundaries, another cliched word, boundaries. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we could go on.
Totally, I know, we could talk all day. And yes, I'm starting to experience the power of saying no. I've been starting to declutter some key things from my life lately and saying no to things and realizing that actually they can carry on without me just fine. They actually step up and they just fill the gap and they don't even really miss me. So, and so, you know, in student situations, obviously there's things you want to say yes to, what's important in your life, your family. So saying no in a non-career limiting or non-relationship limiting way is great. Yeah. So Lotta, we could probably talk all day, but hey, if people wanted to find out more or perhaps get support for themselves, how can they connect in with you and what you're doing?
So I'm most regularly at the Living Sober website, which is an amazing free community funded by the Health Promotion Agency. It's livingsober.org.nz. And it's just a really kind, non-judgmental community. You can be anonymous. You can hide your identity and come into our members feed and we just talk to each other kindly, and it's all people who get what it's like. So that's where I spend most of my time online. I do have a Facebook page and a Twitter and Instagram accounts. That's all Mrs. D is going without, or Mrs. D alcohol free.
Nice. Wonderful. Thank you so much. And if you're listening into this on Spotify or iTunes, just head to thrivetvshow.com and you'll be able to see all of the links down below, and you'll be able to see the video version of this interview if you're not watching us. So just to close off, I'd love to ask you just one final question, Lotta, and that is, what would you say to anyone that's listening in today as one final piece of advice?
Just believe that change is possible. No matter how stuck you feel, trust me, you can get out. Change is possible. And if you have that belief, even if you don't truly believe it now, if you tell yourself, I believe that I will believe down the track, it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, you can turn anything around. Lots and lots of people do, and they beat addiction, if that's what it is you're struggling with, and they get to a happier place. And sorry, I'm just going to jump in with number two.
Connect
with people who understand what you're going through. That might not be your nearest and dearest. So reach out and try and talk to people who do know where you're at, because they've been there too, because that is a very, very powerful thing to do.
Wonderful. I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you for all your time and wisdom, and look forward to continuing just seeing your story unfold, Lotta.
Thank you so much, Lauren. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. So thanks so much for listening in. That's another episode of the Thrive TV Show. Go out and thrive.
Thank you for listening to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons. Visit thrivetvshow.com to access the show notes and discover our fantastic bonus content. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next inspiring episode.